Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered.
The new details tonight on a gruesome discovery. Body parts dumped in St. Clair County.
Tips came into the sheriff's department that body parts were found in garbage bags, including a head and a torso.
It was early January of 2014 when a number of trash bags appeared on several rural routes throughout St. Clair County, Michigan, around 50 miles northeast of Detroit. Inside the trash bags were the dismembered remains of a man. The first theory upon discovery was that the gruesome murder was somehow connected to drugs. However, a witness soon came forward to say that they had witnessed a woman, estimated to be in her 60s, hurling the trash bags from her SUV. Nobody, and I mean nobody, could have ever fathomed the outcome. Upon the grisly discovery, an investigation was launched to uncover who the deceased man was. Quote, "It was clear the homicide hadn't taken place where the parts were found, so we had to work fast to determine who this individual was and where he came from," end quote, said St. Clair County Sheriff Tim Donaldson. Six sheriff's detectives were assigned to the case, and the first point of call was to track down any missing person reports from the area. There were five missing men in the area, and now investigators had to determine if the body belonged to one of those five. Dr. Daniel Spitz, a forensic pathologist who served as the county medical examiner for both Macomb and St. Clair counties, developed a set of fingerprints from the hands that were found in one of the trash bags. Meanwhile, a witness came forward to inform police that they had seen a white female who was driving a grey or white SUV near one of the dumping sites in broad daylight. With this information, investigators went to a nearby gas station along Interstate 94 and obtained their CCTV footage, which captured the same woman driving past. Working on the theory that this woman may have been the culprit who dumped the human remains, police released the CCTV footage in the hopes that somebody could identify the woman in the SUV. By this point, fingerprints had identified the victim as 32-year-old Ramsey Scrivo from St. Clair Shores. Now, investigators had the daunting task of informing Ramsey's family of his grisly death. They obtained information from the Michigan Secretary of State and were able to identify Ramsey's mother as 60-year-old Donna Scrivo. They were given information about Donna so that they could contact her. This information included a driving license photograph of Donna. Investigators noticed immediately that the photograph of Donna was eerily similar to the woman spotted on the CCTV footage. In fact, a number of people had identified the woman in the CCTV footage that was released in the media as Donna. Donna Scrivo was described by those who knew her as a warm and welcoming woman. Donna was known to look out for people when sick or injured. Doris Odrin, one of Donna's neighbours, recollected that on one occasion, her husband hurt his back in a car accident, and Donna often called around just to make sure that he was healing and that he was feeling okay. Next, we will hear from Donna's cousin, Jill McKinley.
Donna was a good mom. She was a caring mom. She was like any of the rest of us, like I have tried to express to people who didn't know Donna. She was the type of person that you would not worry about your children going over to stay the night with Donna. She was a good person. No one had anything against Donna. She would give you anything you needed. If it was a shirt off her back, I know that's a cliche there, but she would. Donna was that kind of person. She had such genuine feelings inside. And it always showed in her. She was always just the type of friend that anybody would want to have as a good friend.
Growing up, the Scrivo family always appeared to be close-knit. However, when it came to the grades of Ramsey and his brother Jason, Donna was said to be very strict. Ramsey and Jason were both enrolled in a private Catholic school, and Donna was always conscious about how the family were perceived among the other residents. Appearances, to Donna, were everything. The boy's father, Donna's husband, Daniel, was a painter while Donna was a registered nurse. When the boys were youngsters, Donna had achieved suburban perfection. She had worked part-time in St. John Hospital and Medical Center in Detroit from 1989. Eventually, Jason moved away from the area after being offered a blue-collar job in another state, leaving Ramsey as the sole child in the household. Ramsey was a graduate of De La Salle Collegiate High School, and afterwards he attended Wayne State University. Here, he received a bachelor's degree in accounting and took up employment as an accountant. However, after a supervisor criticized his work, he resigned. Following this job, Ramsey got a job at Allstate Insurance in Roseville. In 2004, Donna was fired from her role as a nurse. She was allowed to collect unemployment after a three-person panel of the State Employed Security Board of Review said that the claims against Donna regarding two medication errors were not proven. Then in January of 2010, things for Ramsey took a turn for the worst. He was on a night out with friends when he fell over and cracked his head on the concrete floor. The head injury completely transformed Ramsey's life, and in the aftermath, he struggled greatly with concentration and soon enough developed anxiety. Ramsey decided for a career change. For a while, he worked alongside his father in his painting business before he went into building construction trades and then set up his own lawn maintenance business. Donna, who had extremely high expectations of her sons, wasn't happy. She had anticipated that Ramsey would be successful in a blue-collar career, much like Jason, but that wasn't what Ramsey wanted. More than anything, Ramsey wanted to be happy, and when he worked in accountancy firms, he was miserable. While Ramsey was given medication for his anxiety problems, he refused to take them because he didn't feel as though he needed it. Then on the 15th of May, 2013, Donna's husband and Ramsey's father, Daniel, died after a terminal illness. Daniel's illness had a drastic impact on Ramsey's mental health, and following his death, he was inconsolable. On the same day as his death, it was discovered that a bottle of morphine was missing. Donna suggested that Ramsey had stolen the morphine to overdose. Ramsey was admitted to the psychiatric floor of St. John Hospital, where doctors determined that he was suffering from psychosis and determined that he was a danger to himself and that he had expressed suicidal thoughts. However, the toxicology report indicated that Ramsey had no morphine or any drugs in his system. Nevertheless, Ramsey was given a 90-day treatment plan, which included admission to St. John for up to 60 days, although the typical stay was only around 2 weeks. 2 days later, Donna appeared in front of probate judge Carl Malinga to request temporary guardianship of Ramsey. She stated that Ramsey was suicidal after the death of his father and had threatened to hang himself. She was tearful as she relayed Ramsey's mental issues and asked for guardianship over him. Standing before the judge, Donna said, quote, "Ramsey started having really erratic behavior with his father's illness. Ramsey had always said if his dad goes, he was going to kill himself. And his behavior with his friends and our families, erratic and nonsensical, but always a paranoid, persecutory nature," end quote, said Donna. The judge agreed, and Donna was granted temporary guardianship over her son. While addressing her, the judge said, quote, "I'm very sorry for this difficulty you find yourself in. I can see that you're very much invested in doing the best thing for Ramsey," end quote. There had been significant evidence to consider an emergency guardianship, and while Ramsey wasn't happy with having a guardian, he agreed to having guardianship appointed and said that his preference would be his mother. Michigan law permits temporary guardianship to be granted for 28 days, followed by a full hearing. Attorney and former judge Sheila Miller was appointed guardian ad litem and was charged with investigating the matter.
I first met Donna in her home I had scheduled an interview with her son, Ramsey. She was very concerned about her son, Ramsey, because he had a history of mental illness, and there was a recent death. Her husband and Ramsey's father had died. And when that happened, it seemed to really exacerbate his symptoms of mental illness. You know, he was more depressed. He had apparently said something that made her concerned that he might harm himself. She thought that he was suicidal, and she felt that he really needed protection, you know, just to stay safe and to stabilize his moods, that the grief was just too much for him.
Sheila said that there was no indication that anything was wrong with Donna that would make her unable to have guardianship over Ramsey. Quote, "The mother was very pleasant, accommodating, and hospitable," end quote, said Miller. However, when it comes to investigating guardianship matters, there isn't any kind of psychological examination for the potential guardian, nor is there any digging into the family background. The proposed guardian is often a close relative who has been helping with the proposed ward all along, and this was the case when it came to Donna and Ramsey. Donna had always been taking care of her son. In June, a full hearing was held, and Judge Marlinga granted Donna full guardianship. Quote, "It was determined that the son was unable to make informed decisions. You can be incapacitated, but not determined mentally ill to the point that you need to be committed. The evidence from two doctors said he suffered from psychosis, and the doctors noted he was suicidal," end quote, determined the judge. A few months later, a fire broke out in the Scrivo home. Donna was found frantic in the front garden, exclaiming that Ramsey was asleep in the basement. Some people in the area thought it was peculiar that Donna had saved herself from the fire and had clearly made no attempts to rescue Ramsey. Miraculously, however, Ramsey made it out of the house. When he was being seen to by the fire department, they noticed that he appeared to be under the effect of something. He said that he felt drowsy and felt ill. It would be determined that the fire had begun in the basement where Ramsey slept.
The house fire was deemed by the investigators to be suspicious, but there was no evidence that Donna set the fire.
Donna moved into a local hotel before moving into a condo that Ramsey had owned while the home underwent restoration. Ramsey had purchased the condo 8 years earlier, but had never moved in due to the fact that he started an extensive remodeling project, but soon enough abandoned it. Mental illness had truly plagued Ramsey. Donna would confide in friends that she worried that Ramsey had gotten into multiple physical fights because of his poor judgment, and he had once frightened a family friend after he believed that they had poisoned him. In September, Ramsey ripped a crown from one of his teeth after he believed that somebody had implanted a speaker into his tooth and was speaking to him through the speaker. In September, another petition for hospitalization was filed in probate court, and once again, Ramsey was diagnosed with psychosis and paranoia. After being discharged from the hospital, the petition was dismissed after psychiatrists determined that Ramsey no longer met the criteria as a danger to himself or others. This was the last contact that Ramsey or Donna had with the courts. Those who knew Donna and Ramsey said they seemed to have a loving relationship. Just days before Donna had petitioned the court to become Ramsey's guardian, she wrote a message to Ramsey on Facebook. It read, quote, "Happy birthday to our wonderful youngest son, Ramsey. Can't believe you're 32. The warmth of your smile makes us feel good every day," end quote. In a post from 2010, Ramsey had wrote, quote, "Sometimes you have to lose to win. It takes a real man to understand that. Thanks to all the strong women in my life who've taught me that, especially you, Mom," end quote. In another post, he wrote, quote, "I love my mom. For all of you that aren't too proud to say that you love your moms for helping you be the greatest person you are today, please copy and paste this onto your profile," end quote. According to friends of the family, this was the kind of rhetoric that they often heard from Donna and Ramsey. Ramsey loved his mother and he wasn't afraid to show the world his affection. But following the death of Daniel, things became tough. Ramsey had suffered with depression and anxiety throughout his life, but the death of his father exacerbated his mental health issues. Ramsey had confided in a social worker, Mary DeCarolis, that he was having, quote, constant anxiety exhausts, first mentally, then physically, end quote. Ramsey in particular found the death hard and felt as though he couldn't live without his father. Over the years, Ramsey had depended quite heavily on his parents due to his mental health issues. He had struggled to support himself and his relationships. For years, he had paid for half of his own living expenses while his parents paid for the other half. Moreover, Ramsey had always given his parents money so that they could pay his bills. On the 26th of January, 2014, Donna reported Ramsey missing. She claimed he had left the house that afternoon and had not returned. As the search was underway, police received several reports of a middle-aged woman throwing garbage bags from her car window as she drove along the roads of St. Clair. When police arrived at the scene and recovered the garbage bags, they were horrified to discover what was hidden inside: human remains. Donna was arrested and held in Macomb County Jail on $100,000 bail.
I have some unfortunate news. I know that you had liked it. You've seen the videos, the TV reports. Well, for St. Clair County, we believe that that's your son. I'm sorry. Did he have friends in St. Clair County?
Not really.
When's the last time you were there?
I had a patient there a couple years ago.
I'm a little confused. I know you were in St. Clair County yesterday.
No.
She was charged with dismembering Ramsey's body and dumping it. However, she wasn't charged with his murder. Quote, at this point, all we can prove now is the dismemberment allegations. We charged her with what we can prove, end quote, said Police Chief Todd Woodcox. Days later, Donna was arraigned in 40th District Court on one count of disinterment and mutilation of a dead body, which was a 10-year felony, and one count of removing a body without the permission of a medical examiner, which was a 1-year misdemeanor. The judge ordered that Donna undergo a psychological assessment after an investigator expressed concern about her mental health. Following Donna's arrest, friends and family, and even her neighbours, struggled to reconcile Donna with the woman they saw on the news, accused of such a grisly crime. Donna's former neighbour, Doris, said, quote, I know that she loved her son. She doted on him. I can't imagine what could have happened between them, end quote. Doris's husband, Tom, agreed, stating, quote, there's got to be something more to this. The death of her husband last year threw her for a loop. I think it threw the whole family for a loop, end quote.
The first thing I heard on Facebook about Donna was a couple of our classmates had posted that she had been arrested. And, of course, immediately you're wondering what in the world was she arrested for. And when it came up what she was arrested for, everyone was like, no, she did not do this. Either she's covering up for someone, or she was totally lost it, or something snapped maybe. We did not believe it, but none of us believed it.
Probate Judge Carl Malinga, who had appointed Donna guardianship over Ramsey, worried that there was something he may have missed and was plagued with the notion that he may have made a mistake. However, after reviewing the case, he found nothing untoward with Donna, quote, after the fact, I looked at the file and found there was nothing to suggest any mental health difficulties or any ulterior motive at all. When you're appointing a guardian, you can only go by the information you have available, end quote, he said. Erica Plentis, who had worked with Donna in the home healthcare industry for 7 years, said that she had never even heard Donna speak negatively about Ramsey. Quote, she was very southern sweet. She always had the best intentions when we worked together. She would do whatever she could to help anybody, end quote, she said. Police soon enough announced the investigation was ongoing, but said that they had found the tool used to dismember Ramsay, but refused to elaborate any further. Almost as soon as Ramsay's dismembered remains were discovered, Donna had donated her SUV to Mother Waddle's car donation program, a Detroit-based charity. 3 days earlier, she had donated Ramsay's Ford Focus to the same charity shop. Quote, "In my opinion, the Focus may have been the car her son drove, and therefore she wanted it to disappear, because he was quote-unquote missing. She said she wanted it picked up right away," end quote, said Rick Fraser, the manager of the charity. Investigators, however, had been able to track the SUV down, and an examination uncovered blood and bleach stains inside the SUV, as well as blood and bleach stains inside the condo where Donna had been living with Ramsay. Furthermore, a number of witnesses informed police that they had seen Donna carrying black garbage bags sometime last week. Ramsay's autopsy had been conducted, but a cause of death had not yet been released. They said they were waiting for the toxicology results, which were being handled by the Michigan State Police Crime Lab. By this point, Donna had gone completely silent. She had refused to speak to investigators. After threatening suicide, she was moved to the mental health ward of Macomb County Jail. Meanwhile, her bond was raised to $250,000, and during the bail hearing, Donna was represented by Clinton Township attorney Mark Haddad. He said that he couldn't comment on the case, but said, quote, "In the short time I've had to interact with her, she's a very sweet, very polite, very soft-spoken lady," end quote. During a bond hearing later on in the month, Assistant Prosecutor William Cataldo said that there were ligature marks on Ramsay's neck and blunt force trauma to his head and shoulders. He also said that there was evidence that he had been set on fire. Quote, "The way that the body was horrifically mutilated, including the decapitation of the head, which is right at the ligature marks, which is right where the asphyxiation occurred, and the muscles necessary to make that cause of death determination have been burned as a result of the body being placed lightly in the bathtub and set on fire after it was mutilated," end quote. This was the first time that a cause of death had been announced. During the hearing, Donna made her first public statement. She described how she was living with Ramsay at the time. Quote, "I was taking care of my son because he would not take his medications, and I was trying to look for a job at the same time. But he wasn't getting any better, and if you don't make him take them, he didn't take them," end quote. Defense attorney Haddad responded to the statements, stating that there was, quote, "no evidence that she did anything wrong. He did not say one thing that pointed the finger at her. I don't know why he had a rope or rope-like burn on his neck. Maybe he hanged himself. He was suicidal," end quote. However, prosecutors said that there was CCTV footage of Donna purchasing a skill saw power saw, which prosecutors and police said had been used to dismember Ramsay. Furthermore, the electric saw had been found inside one of the bags that contained Ramsay's body parts. Other evidence against Donna included DNA in the form of blood found in the trunk of Donna's SUV. Moreover, Dr. Daniel Spitz would determine that Ramsay died of asphyxiation and ruled his death a homicide. He also said that there was evidence of blunt force trauma to the head and shoulders. Following the confirmed cause of death, attorney Haddad said, quote, "According to the medical examiner, he did not kill himself. I don't know if that's going to be disputed. They claim it's his mother. Who knows?" End quote. The following day, however, Donna was charged with first-degree murder. A new attorney, Elias Moavad, was subsequently retained to represent Donna on all three charges. Days later, Donna was determined to be competent to stand trial. However, her defense attorney requested a second psychological exam, and the judge agreed. The second opinion would not only be to test her ability in her defense, but also to determine whether she knew right from wrong when she killed Ramsay and mutilated his body. Quote, "The times I have seen her in the jail, she's been in and out of reality. She's got some rough issues, but I'm not a psychologist. I'm not competent to say what her mental status was on that day," said attorney Moavad. In early September, Donna was once again found competent to stand trial, much to the surprise of many locals who said that only somebody insane could commit such a crime against their own child.
I think the general public thought she was. Someone would have to be crazy to not only kill their own child, but then cut up their body. And the way she distributed the body parts in St. Clair County, it was just shocking to people. How could someone do something like this?
Donna waived her right to a preliminary hearing, and instead, she said she would go straight to trial. She denied that she was involved in Ramsey's murder, and speaking through her attorney, she said that she was prepared to go to trial and prove her innocence. Quote, "She's mentally competent, but she's very depressed and confused at times. She's aware of the proceedings and is able to assist me," end quote, said attorney Muavad. Shortly thereafter, attorney Muavad withdrew from the case, stating that Donna had run out of money and was unable to pay him. The cost for defending a first-degree murder defendant is thousands of dollars, and then even more in expert fees beyond the cost of courtroom work. Because Donna could no longer afford an attorney, she would be assigned an attorney. Mark Haddad, Donna's original attorney, was once again appointed to defend her. He requested a third mental evaluation of her, stating that he believed that she was mentally incompetent. Quote, "I don't think she's comprehending. I don't trust her ability to communicate with me," end quote, attorney Haddad said to Judge Richard Coretti. The judge noted that Donna had already received two mental evaluations, but scheduled a hearing for attorney Haddad to argue why Donna needed a third evaluation. Once again, Donna would be determined to be mentally competent. While Donna had waived her right to a preliminary hearing, attorney Haddad requested one. In December of 2014, the preliminary hearing began. The purpose was to determine whether there was enough evidence against Donna to send her to trial for her son's murder. During the preliminary trial, Detective Stephen Rickert described the moment that he looked inside the trash bags containing Ramsey's body. Quote, "On top of the snow, I see something bloody. We walked over and discovered it was the thigh portion buttocks of a human," end quote. He also described how when Donna was informed that her dismembered son had been discovered in trash bags, she appeared to be very calm, she showed little emotion, she didn't cry, nor did she ask what had happened to her son.
She did not react like a normal person. If you were just told that your loved one was discovered, dismembered, and left like rubbish on the side of the road, I would believe anybody would just be overwhelmingly anguished, distraught, of which we didn't get that. Her response was, "Are you sure?" And from having talked with her earlier and the day of her being so insistent that it was him and that she had to go to St. Clair County to identify his body, for her now to say, "Are you sure?" was quite baffling to me.
According to Detective Rickert, as soon as he entered the condo, he was hit by an overwhelming smell of bleach. Quote, "Immediately upon opening the door, you could smell bleach. Once upstairs, you could also smell smoke or something. In the bedroom, a shape in the center of the floor looked like it had been scrubbed with bleach. It was whiter than the rest of the carpet," end quote, he testified. It was evident that something had been scrupulously cleaned up. Inside one of the bedrooms, crime scene investigators found Ramsey's blood. They also found more of his blood on and near the front and back doors of the home. There were several people who would testify that they saw Donna with trash bags around the same time that Ramsey's body was discovered. Her neighbour, Patricia Bentanzos, described how she saw Donna struggling with trash bags as she carried them from the condo to her SUV. She said she watched on as Donna hauled the trash bags into her SUV, struggling to throw them in. Quote, "They appeared heavy," end quote, she said. Upon witnessing Donna struggle with the bags, Patricia wondered where Ramsey was. It was unusual that he wasn't helping his mother. Later, Donna was driving past Patricia and stopped for a chat. She said to Patricia that Ramsey had vanished and she feared that he had gone on a binge. Donna told Patricia that Ramsey had disappeared on the 25th of January, but to another neighbour, Donna said he went missing on the 26th of January. Then there was Randy Simmons, who was driving in the area of Fred Moore West Highway and Allington Road in St. Clair, where he saw Donna dumping a bag out of the SUV. He said that initially he had thought that she was dumping the body of a dog. However, when he later heard about the dismembered body being found dumped along the road, he decided to call police to report what he had seen. Dr. Daniel Spitz, who had conducted Ramsey's autopsy, also testified. He said that there was a high level of Xanax in Ramsey's system, 400 nanograms per millimeter, which is around four times what you would expect to see in somebody who is normally taking the drug. He said that not only was this a contributing factor in Ramsey's death, it would have also rendered him unconscious or so lethargic that he was susceptible to an attack. So in short, Ramsey wouldn't have been able to defend himself. He also described how Ramsey had suffered from a broken Adam's apple, which indicated strangulation, possibly with a device used to assist. Dr. Spitz also testified that Ramsey's body had been charred and his hair was singed. Detective Sergeant Jay Coho testified that Donna's phone pinged to a tower off Fred Moore Highway and Allington, near where Ramsey's body was dumped. The time that the phone pinged to the tower was around the same time that Randy had spotted Donna dumping the trash bag. Furthermore, in the days that Ramsey was reportedly missing, his phone wasn't used other than to check voicemails. Also testifying was Erica Matthews, a cashier at a BP gas station off Interstate 94 at the Fred Moore exit, near where Ramsey's body was found. Donna had purchased petrol here on the same day she was spotted dumping trash bags. According to Erica, Donna had looked disheveled, confused, and frustrated. Quote, "I was thinking this lady was having a bad day. She was kind of frustrated, in a rush. I tried to calm her down," end quote, testified Erica. When attorney Haddad testified, he said that two of Ramsey's neighbours indicated that they saw a, quote, "mysterious or suspicious," end quote, person around the condo around the same time that Ramsey vanished. Furthermore, he acknowledged that while Ramsey's blood was found inside Donna's SUV and in the condo, none was found on Donna or her clothing. Quote, "I think there's a strong case that someone else actually did the murder. It might have been a suicide. I don't know. I wasn't there," end quote, he said. After all of the testimony was heard, the judge ordered that Donna stand trial for the murder of Ramsey. Quote, "Based upon the conduct of the defendant, showing her actions to conceal the death of the deceased, the court finds that there is a question of fact or probable cause to believe the defendant is the individual who perpetrated the homicide," end quote. The trial was scheduled for May of 2015. As preparations for trial were underway, there was a court hearing to determine if Donna's interview with police could be used as evidence. Prosecutors had wanted to use 52 minutes of the more than 2-hour interview at the St. Clair Shores police station. However, during the interview, Donna had stated, quote, "I think I need a lawyer," end quote. Assistant Prosecutor William Cataldo argued to the judge that Donna's phrasing indicated that she maybe wanted a lawyer. Attorney Haddad, however, disagreed and stated that Donna saying she needed a lawyer should have prevented the investigators from questioning her further. Furthermore, the investigators hadn't read Donna her Miranda warnings at crucial times, such as when she was first arrested, when she went into the interview room, and when they started to question her. Instead, she was finally read her Miranda rights 1 hour and 55 minutes into the interview. Ultimately, the judge ruled that the interview could not be used during trial. Quote, "When the defendant stated, 'I think I need a lawyer,' at the 1 hour 17 mark, she was making an unambiguous and unequivocal assertion to her right to counsel," end quote, ruled the judge. The murder trial began in May of 2015. During opening statements, prosecutor William Cataldo said that the death of a child before a parent is sad, but it's a tragedy when a parent takes the life of his or her child. Quote, "Not only does he die before his mother, he literally and figuratively died at the hands of his mother. This is unspeakable because it's planned, premeditated, and carried out by his mother," end quote, he said. Prosecutor Cataldo told the jury that Donna had drugged her son with a lethal dose of Xanax and then strangled him with a device at some point between 6:30 p.m. and 11 p.m. on the 25th of January 2014, before cutting his body up in the bathtub. He went on to describe how Donna then dumped 14 pieces of his remains 5 days later. The prosecutor also gave a grim piece of information that was not yet publicly known. When Donna was dumping the trash bag that contained Ramsey's head, it had rolled out of the bag and onto the road, where a witness found it. The prosecution put forward the theory that Donna had drugged Ramsey with Xanax. Ramsey stood at 5 feet 9 inches tall and weighed 240 pounds. There was just no way that Donna could have overpowered her son without him being subdued. At the time of his death, Ramsey was on probation and house arrest and required drug and alcohol testing 4 times a day. At no time did Ramsey ever test positive with Xanax or any other kind of drugs. Furthermore, it was Donna who was prescribed Xanax, and in July, she had been given a 90-day supply, and when her house was searched, there was only one pill left. In his responsive opening statement, attorney Haddad described Donna as a doting mother. He also described Donna as a nurse who was very good at her job until a heart attack in 2003 left her forgetful, nervous, and anxious. He explained that Donna had no history of violence, but said that Ramsey was, quote, psychotic, end quote, and that he couldn't hold down a job and had attempted to kill himself in the past. According to attorney Haddad, Ramsey had a number of enemies which stemmed from the numerous bar fights he had been in. He said that there was no reason for Donna to murder her son and said that police had no DNA evidence to connect Donna to Ramsey's death. He also claimed that there was not enough evidence for a murder conviction. Quote, it's a murder case full of holes, ladies and gentlemen, end quote, he said. The same witnesses that testified during the preliminary trial testified once again. However, there were a number of additional witnesses. One of the first witnesses to take the stand was Detective Stephen Rickert. He described how they discovered Ramsey's head, partly out of the bag, and nearby they found some organs. Detective Rickert said that presumably the organs had been inside a trash bag, but the bag had blown away due to high winds. He described how all of Ramsey's body parts were recovered except for his right arm. Other items in the trash bags included the skill jigsaw that had been used to dismember Ramsey, 4 saw blades, packaging for the saw and blades, a woman's sweater, jogging pants, a half dozen burnt matches, charred gloves, socks, and men's pajama bottoms. Juanita Valesco, an assistant manager at the Lowe's store in Harper Woods, testified that Donna had purchased the skill jigsaw at 9 a.m. on the 27th of January. When she was in the store debating on what electric saw to buy, she refused to tell the assistant what she needed it for. They had explained that if they knew what she needed it for, then they could better recommend a saw for her. Donna simply said that she needed the saw for, quote, little projects, end quote. Juanita told the jury around 11 hours later, Donna came back to the store to return the saw, stating that it wasn't working. According to Juanita, Donna appeared to be urgent and persistent that she needed assistance right away. She was given a new 7.2 volt power jigsaw to replace the one she had purchased earlier. The most distressing part of the trial came when a graphic photograph of Ramsey's body was displayed on a big screen in the courtroom. The photograph showed Ramsey's body pieced together. The 12 pieces, other than the missing right arm, fit together like a puzzle.
When they put the photos on the big screen in the courtroom, there was a gasp. People were shocked. It was difficult to see the autopsy photos, especially for family members as well as anyone else in the courtroom. It was hard. There was a full body shot of Ramsey and with his body parts put back together, and it was pretty horrifying to see. People were shocked. I think it really cemented how heinous of a crime this was for people, and how raw this crime was.
Dr. Spitz showed the evidence of charring on Ramsey's body and described how a knife had been used to cut through Ramsey's flesh while the electric saw had been used to cut through his bones. He described how he found a 4.5-inch ligature mark on Ramsey's neck, and under questioning by Prosecutor Cataldo, Dr. Spitz said that the horizontally oriented mark was not consistent with being hanged. Quote, "I don't see this as evidence of a suicidal hanging," end quote, he said. Ligature marks in a typical hanging are less pronounced and go upwards towards the back of the head as opposed to horizontally. A neighbour, Darcia Plant, told the courtroom that in the days following the 25th of January, she had heard suspicious sawing sounds coming from the Scrivo's condo. While hearing a saw coming from the condo wouldn't be that strange considering Ramsey was always doing renovations, Darcia found it suspicious that whoever was sawing appeared to be trying to do it quietly.
It just sounded suspicious.
You used the word sneaky in your statement. Could you describe what you meant by that?
Well, it sounded like he was trying to be quiet about it, which I thought was strange because we all knew that he was always working on his, he was always renovating, and we could always hear loud renovation noises, sanding, and a lot of loud noises when you renovate. It sounded like someone, like he, it just assumed it was it assumed it was he was the one who was doing it. It sounded like he was trying to be quiet about it.
And how was it, I guess, that you got that sense?
It would kind of start a little bit, and then stop, start again. It just sounded like he was trying to cover up the noise.
In addition to the sawing sounds, Darcia had noticed a strange odor emanating from the condo.
Can you describe the smell?
It was very strange. It was, it smelled like something was burning, but not like a house was on fire. Mixed with some sort of chemical, maybe. It was something I had never really smelled before, so it concerned me.
Had you seen Ramsey at any time, I guess, during that week? We're talking about Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
No.
How long did this smell stay in your condo?
Couple hours, 3 hours.
Did you ever go next door and knock on the door to ask about the smell?
I was going to, but I thought if it doesn't dissipate in a little while, then I would.
Did you do anything to check, I guess, around your own condo to see if it was coming from your place?
Yes, just to make sure. I checked all my appliances, and then I looked outside to see if there was a utility truck that could have been causing that smell, but I never smelled anything like that, and I just assumed that Ramsey was working on a project, some sort of special project in his home.
Under cross-examination, Darcia testified that she saw a man she did not know possibly exiting from Ramsey's condo. However, she said that she couldn't be sure if he was exiting from Ramsey's condo or the unit on the other side. She also said that she believed she saw the man again after Ramsey was found at the condo beside Ramsey's. Up until now, there hadn't been one person to say a negative word about Donna. Over and over again, she was described as a loving and caring mother. Southern sweet was the word that most people used. However, Donna's sister-in-law, Alison Furtaugh, testified during the trial that Donna had a difficult relationship with Ramsey and she had a, quote, bad temper, end quote, and was controlling of her son. She told the jury that when Donna had moved in with Ramsey following the fire at her home, she had worried that it was a bad idea. Quote, "They loved each other, but they had a difficult relationship. Sometimes there would be lots of arguing, and she had trouble coping with my brother's death, end quote, she said. Allison described how sometimes the arguments became so heated that her brother had to mediate between the two of them. Allison told the jury that she had seen Ramsey often in the months leading up to his death because he was working on her home. She said that she saw no indications that he was suicidal, but said she knew he suffered from anxiety issues and self-medicated by drinking alcohol. She said that he appeared to be doing well. She discussed Donna's temper in connection with a 1998 incident which took place in the hallway of a courthouse where Ramsey was facing a minor in possession of alcohol charge as a West Michigan University student. Donna had been upset that Allison, who knew the prosecutor on the case, hadn't managed to get the prosecutor to dismiss the charge. Quote, "My sister-in-law screamed and yelled at me, and I didn't see my nephews for 8 years. She basically lost it. Donna was very angry at me that the prosecutor didn't deliver this favor," end quote, Allison said. Allison also recollected that she learned that Ramsey was missing on the 27th of January. She told Donna that she should post about Ramsey's disappearance on Facebook, but Donna refused, stating that Ramsey would be embarrassed by the attention.
"When you talk to Donna about doing something on Facebook or putting up posters, and she seemed hesitant because she said it might embarrass him.
Yeah.
Did you agree that it would have been potentially embarrassing?"
"No, I thought it was nuts. I thought we should definitely put something on Facebook, but..."
"You have an account on Facebook. You're friends with Ramsey?"
"Yes."
"You could have taken it upon yourself to do that if you thought it was so important, didn't you? Or couldn't you? And you didn't do that."
"Right. Yes."
"Did you put up posters? It looks like you have photographs in your possession. Did you go around the neighborhood and tack up posters and say, 'Kid missing'?"
"No, I talked to Margaret. I called the police and talked to my law enforcement friends to help look for him. I called the jail. I called all my family members. I didn't put up a poster."
When Donna told Allison about Ramsey's disappearance, Allison noticed scratches on Donna's wrists and forearms. She inquired about the injuries, and Donna claimed that they were caused by branches she had come into contact with while she was searching for Ramsey. Furthermore, she believed that Donna had accelerated her husband Daniel's death by injecting him with vitamin B12 that she didn't have prescribed. The shot site had become infected, and Allison believed that this led to failure of multiple organs with coronary disease as a contributing cause.
"Now, ma'am, you don't mean to suggest somehow that Donna is indirectly responsible for your brother's death?" You're pausing.
"I'm not sure. I didn't think before my nephew died, no, but I did wonder why she gave him a shot, knowing that..."
"You were aware that he was prescribed to have that vitamin shot that
no.
was prescribed by his physician? You weren't aware of that?"
Danny told me he was supposed to take it under his tongue, so I was curious why I did the shot. I didn't think anything of it, to be honest. When Ramsey died, I did kind of wonder, like, why did she give him the shot? How come the doctor didn't give him the shot?"
"But yet you knew she was, once she was, he made her aware of the red marks, she was urging him to get it looked at by a physician, correct?"
"Yes."
"And he never did that."
"He went in the following week, right, and by then he was in organ failure." "Yes, right."
"Okay, so it was at her urging that... he should have gone to see the doctor for that, and he didn't do it very quickly."
"Right."
"Oh.
Yes."
"All right."
Before the end of her testimony, Allison said that she agreed with the prosecutor's theory that Donna had murdered Ramsey, and said she wished she had have tried to seek guardianship over Ramsey. Donna decided she would testify on her own behalf. When she took to the stand, she made the shocking claim that an intruder had murdered Ramsey. She was emotional as she rambled about an alleged masked man who killed her son. She described waking up on the morning of the 26th of January to find the front door open. She then went upstairs and allegedly saw a masked man in Ramsey's room. Quote, "Mrs. Scrivo, I didn't know you were here," end quote, the man apparently said to Donna. She next described how the intruder told her that he had mixed bleach and Xanax with Coke and Ramsey drank it. Quote, "He said he got the gun and was going to shoot Ramsey, but that would be too noisy. And then he saw the Xanax bottle and decided to give him the Xanax," end quote, she told the courtroom. Donna said she tried to grab the gun, but wasn't fast enough. Next, she said that the intruder put her into the bedroom, put a scarf in her mouth, and then handcuffed her. According to Donna, this alleged intruder had red and yellow, or red and gold eyes. Around 45 minutes into her testimony, Donna started to describe the murder, but beforehand, she had made a request to retrieve more of her notes that she had left on the defense table. She claimed that after being handcuffed in the bedroom, she heard Ramsey shout, quote, "What are you doing?" end quote. She then heard the intruder reply, quote, "I'm killing you. You're ruining Frank's life. You're making us look like assholes," end quote. According to Donna, she then heard Ramsey say that he couldn't breathe, and then things fell silent. Donna told the courtroom that after Ramsey was dead, the intruder held her by her hair and ordered her to do what he asked, or said that he would kill her son, Jason, who lived in another state. She said the intruder also threatened her by saying that he knew her niece, attended Grosse Pointe South High School, and worked at El Charro Restaurant.
Did you recognize anything about that person's voice?
No.
Did you recognize anything about the person's gait or the way he walked?
No.
Did you recognize anything about his mannerisms?
No.
Do you believe you had ever seen that person before?
I don't think so.
What happened after he killed your son?
He drug me in there by my hair, and I didn't want to go, and he made me visually see my son was dead, and I kind of reached for Ramsey. He didn't let go of my hair, and he kept yanking me back.
Where was Ramsey's body?
It was propped up against the side of his bed in his bedroom, and he wasn't breathing.
How are you certain he was dead?
I didn't see him breathing. I looked for his chest to move. I didn't see any breath. And I kept trying to reach for him, and he didn't let me. And that's when he said that about if I didn't do what he said, that he would kill any named off two of my nieces and my great niece and nephew, and then he said Jason's name.
Jason, your eldest
Jason's
son?
My oldest son.
You said the man had a gun?
He had a gun.
Will you describe it?
I know it was a pistol.
Color?
It's brown color, metal color.
What happened next?
I started seeing these little men with red and gold eyes flashing in front of me, and I don't know what happened, but that's what I saw.
And do you believe that was a hallucination?
Now I know it was. I don't know what I thought then.
About what time did the intruder kill Ramsey?
I was trying to cut my time.
Was it dark out?
No.
Donna then said that the intruder told her he needed to dispose of Ramsey and cut him up into pieces. She claimed that she was held prisoner in the home for the next 5 days, while the intruder ordered her to report Ramsey missing at the police station and ordered her to purchase the electric saw and cancel Ramsey's car insurance. She claimed that 2 days after the murder, the intruder dismembered Ramsey in the bathroom.
When did the intruder begin using the saw, if you know?
I heard him the next morning using the saw.
Was that, would that have been Tuesday?
Tuesday morning. It's 28. I heard him using the saw.
Did you see what he was doing with it?
No, I'm in my bedroom with the door shut.
How long did he saw?
Not long, because he came and he got me. He was swearing and I heard him talking, but I couldn't make it. And he came and got me and he said, Mother Wobbles will be here. So he got me out and they came and they got the Focus. And then he put me back in there the same way. And then I heard sawing, heard smells.
What kinds of smells?
Smells like flesh burning.
Okay.
She told the jury that the intruder had forced her to dump Ramsey's body and claimed he then ordered her to donate both her SUV and Ramsey's car to the charity.
You drove out to the BP gas station off of I-94, correct?
Yes.
What vehicle did you drive?
A silver SUV, the Blazer.
And where was the intruder when you made that trip?
In the back seat, for the Lord.
He was with you?
Yes. Thursday morning. He got up, got me out, pulled me downstairs, put a gun in my forehead and said, you are going to help now. Told me to put the bags in the car. I did. And he told me to, we drove out 94. When he said exit, my gas tank was past empty. I pulled into that BP gas station.
You went in and you talked to the young lady, the cashier there?
Yes.
And did you tell her, I need help, please call the police?
No.
Why not?
The same reason. I'm 61 years old. My nieces and nephews have a full life ahead of them. I'm not putting them in danger. By this time, my son had been brutally murdered. He had been cut up and thrown home. And now he's in garbage bags. I'm wondering, do any of you think I was thinking racially, or that I wasn't so afraid out of my mind?
So you didn't ask for help at the gas station?
No, sir.
And am I to understand at that point your son's remains were in garbage bags in the back of the S10?
Yes.
How did they get from there to strewn about the roadway?
He said, well, I didn't even know what street that was until I heard it here. Pull out from the BP, turned right, and first he said, stop and get at least one bag and put it over there. And he points. He was just pointing at the side of the road. It was snow. So I stopped. And I cry out and I'm crying, and he's screaming, hurry up. And by the time I opened the passenger door, He reached over and pushed the bag out. Pushed it out.
When questioned as to why she didn't tell police or the employees at Lowe's where she purchased the electric saw, or the employees at State Farm where she cancelled Ramsey's insurance, or the employee at BP where she filled up her SUV with petrol, or any of the people she came into contact with, such as her sister-in-law and her neighbours, Donna said that she was being held hostage by the intruder. Quote, "I'm 61 years old. My nieces and nephews have their whole life ahead of them. I'm not putting them in danger," end quote, she said. According to Donna, the intruder had told her that if she told anybody what had happened before noon on the 31st of January, he would hunt down her family and kill them like he did Ramsey.
So you actually expect this jury to believe that story?
That is the story.
That's the truth. That's the whole truth.
Yes,
that's what actually happened.
Yes,
let's stop with the 5 days of horror. I want to answer this question, okay? You had your chance on direct to repeat that over and over and over, and we're going to talk about that in just a second, okay? Because I want to ask another question. Why did he let you live?
I asked my question.
Why did he let you live?
I asked myself. You don't think I'd rather be gone and my son here?
Well, I mean, that's just it. I read the papers on Friday. A tornado blows through Kansas. This young couple who live in a mobile home sacrificed their lives to save their 18-month-old child. And here, you do absolutely nothing to save your son Jason, to save the nieces and nephews. They're sitting here with these fake tears crying over, okay? When you say a few minutes ago that you're 61, you have nothing else to live for, they have their whole lives ahead of them, then why don't you sacrifice yourself? Why don't you take a chance? Why don't you do something?
Tell me what you wanted me to do, Mr.
I'll tell you what, he's in the car when you're at the police station hiding in the back of your Ford Escape. Why don't you go to Officer Mason and say, "Officer, the guy, the killer, the intruder, is in the back seat of my car. He just murdered my son in cold blood. He put me in handcuffs. He beat me. He chained me to my bed. And he's in your parking lot. Please help me." As opposed to, I want to file a missing persons report.
The story, of course, was extremely far-fetched. Quote, "Do you actually expect this jury to believe that story?" end quote, questioned Prosecutor Cataldo. During his cross-examination of Donna, she became confused. Initially, she had said that the intruder was in the car with her while she went to the police station, Lowe's, and elsewhere. However, now she claimed that he wasn't in the car, and then she said she couldn't remember if he was in the car or not. According to Prosecutor Cataldo, Donna had begun a new relationship in Dallas, Texas, and wanted to be free of the burden of Ramsey. Quote, "If he's gone, you get to start over," end quote, he said. In fact, this new relationship had begun 8 months before Daniel's death. At a 40-year school reunion, Donna had rekindled a relationship with an old boyfriend. After Daniel died, Donna had even tried to encourage Ramsey to move to Texas with her so that she could live with her new boyfriend. However, Ramsey refused. This was the very first time that a motivation had been put forward. In closing statements, Prosecutor Cataldo called Donna's version of events fake.
"What got me about Friday and her need for the notes, Mark Twain said it best. Mark Twain said, an honest man need not have a good memory. Which means we've all had tragedies in our lives that we remember the details of. This has to have been the most tragic thing in her life. Yet, she can't testify. She's throwing a little hissy fit on Friday because she's got to have her notes. The only reason you need notes is when you've made the story up and you want to be certain that you're consistent within the story. And the reason that that doesn't work, the reason you know that story is completely made up and false, aside from the fact that when my kids were small, I wanted to give them a quarter for real tears, and we get all the facial expressions, but I didn't see any tears. I didn't see any tears."
Defense lawyer Haddad, of course, refuted this.
"So they want you to believe she's the murderer,
She dismembered her own child, and she did all these crazy things in broad daylight. Driving to the insurance office, driving to Lowe's, driving to the Secretary of State, driving to the police department. She would have to be the stupidest murderer ever in the world, in real life, in fiction, any place, any time. No one would be that stupid to behave in such a way unless she was forced. Unless she was directed at gunpoint to do these seemingly stupid things.
Ultimately, the jury rejected Donna's testimony and they found her guilty of first-degree murder and mutilation of a body. She was sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. Despite the fact that Donna was found guilty, a number of her friends and family continued to rally around her. Many speculated that if she were guilty, then she must have had a momentarily lapse of sanity.
I personally do not believe Donna could ever do anything she's been accused of. That's my own inside feeling. And if that did happen, I know she's already been tried and everything, but if that did happen, I know that Donna had something very, very wrong in her life that she could not deal with. And I know that it meant a lot to her just to hear from friends. Well, you know, we have the best justice system in the whole world. We know that. And so we have to accept the fact that what's happened has happened. It's very hard to still think that this is something that someone I knew so well would do such a horrific thing to another person. But I do believe that if you are like someone who holds in a lot of your feelings, and finally something just makes you just explode, and you can't control yourself. I believe that I used to not believe in temporary insanity. Now I know it exists.
I cried because I don't want to think of her that way. I don't want to think of her being in prison. I don't want to think of her not having someone to love her, someone to console her. So whether she did it or not, she lost her son. I cannot imagine what that would be like. My sons are still with me, and I just can't imagine the grief that comes with that.
It's a tragedy when a child dies before their parent, but it's a travesty when a parent kills their own child. In a perfect world, those who suffer from mental illness are surrounded by a supportive family, but in the case of Ramzi Scrivo, the very person who was entrusted to care for him when he needed it the most was the same person who abused that trust in the most horrific way. To this day, Donna Scrivo has never admitted to the murder, but when a parent has unnatural expectations of a child, it can clearly lead to disaster. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to take a little second to say that I hope that everybody is staying home and staying safe. Over the upcoming weeks, I'm trying to put out as much content as possible on Morbidology so that everybody has something to read. I'm trying as well to do some bonus episodes on Patreon and Himalaya Plus. I'd also like to ask that if you enjoy Morbidology, please, please, please consider giving me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening. It truly does help out. Big thanks to everybody who has simply listened to an episode, shared an episode, commented on an episode. Any kind of support is very much appreciated. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, Skinwalker. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
Helen Puttock kisses her two children goodbye as she heads off to spend the night dancing at Glasgow's Barrowland Ballroom. Whilst there, she meets a young handsome man by the name of John. Throughout their conversation, John inexplicably quotes from the Bible. The following morning, Helen's body is discovered, strangled by the very stocking she had worn the night previous. The man responsible.
We are talking about one Bible John.
This is a Bible John.
For this and other cases like it, I'm Jess, and this is Skinwalker. Search for Skinwalker True Crime on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.